It's time for You Talking to Me with your host, Big JD.
That's right. This is You Talking to Me. I'm your host, Big JD. Don't forget to keep an eye out for Big JD and Lippo in the morning, coming to CJM mornings after Labor Day. Yeah, it's going to be a blast, and I'll let you know what day and time that is as soon as I have the information. You can also keep an eye on the CJM website, probably for that. And info for that is cjam.ca. And of course, keep an eye on You Talking to Me, the You Talking to Me website, youtalkingtome.ca. My guest on the show today is award-winning photographer Les Ward. He's very unique. He's put together a book of unstoppable Detroiters who could have taken their business anywhere in the world during the economic downturn, but chose to stay in Detroit. And what's interesting about this is that although he's not in the pages of his book, Les Ward is one of those people. He's truly unstoppable, as you'll find out. And he has stopped here to talk to us. So please welcome Les Ward to You Talking to Me. Hi, Les.
Well, how you doing? It's great to be here.
Great. So what got you... I guess we're going to back up quite a ways probably, but what got you interested in taking pictures?
Well, I've been around art and design since grade school.
Oh.
And I discovered in high school, I went to Cass Tech in Detroit, and I discovered car styling. And I decided that would be something pretty cool to do. So I really took that on seriously.
Mm-hmm.
And then when I graduated, I went to College for Creative Studies, which had one of the premier programs and still does in the U.S. and now the world. Mm-hmm. And so after I got there, I was wide open to all these new possibilities.
Sure.
And I discovered that I didn't want to be a car designer anymore.
Right.
We had to take all these other requisites, and photography came up. I never picked up a camera, and it started to look interesting.
So do you, when did you realize that you would, you could maybe do this for a living? Was it?
Well, you know, I was still in industrial design, transportation design for the first year. And then I said, you know, I think I'll go into advertising design because, ultimately that's where a lot of photography is used. And, even though I hung around a lot of the photo majors, but I was never a photo major.
Mm-hmm.
So what I created was, you know, getting this background in design and advertising. And then I, when I left school, I went right to a studio.
Uh-huh.
And that's where I really started to get what it's about. I always wanted to be just in the advertising world. Like, that's the top echelon. Like, you know, the impeccability and the accountability and the integrity are like top notch.
Right. Do you do any videography as well, or did you?
Well, you know, that's coming up for a lot of people today because a lot of the print imagery has sort of been diminished. Everybody's going into different media.
Mm-hmm.
It's never been anything I've been interested in, you know, any kind of motion stuff. What I really love about still photography is the picture sits there.
Right.
And you could see everything that works and everything that doesn't work.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what I really like about it. You really got to make it hit.
Have you shot weddings or anything like that? Is that something?
Well, I did one as a favor.
Yeah.
I'm still working on the post-production, but that's an art unto itself.
Uh-huh. And you talk about post-production, so you're talking, you did wedding videography?
Oh, no, no, no. The post-production would be all the processing of all the images. Oh,
okay.
You know, and that stuff shot, any pictures that... you know, I shoot all raw files, and then
sure,
it's only half done. There's so much that has to be done in post that really makes the picture come alive, and there's no shortcutting that.
I wanted to ask you a little bit about the types of work that you do, and maybe you can offer some little bit of insight into shooting in these particular areas, like possibly shooting still life, and especially food, is something that you've shot. What kind of preparation needs to go into that? Especially sometimes you see food looks like it's shot so well and looks so good, but is it actually like fresh food or is it
totally do? Totally. Yeah? I phased out of food probably about 18 years ago because the car stuff came along.
Right.
So my tabletops got bigger.
Mm-hmm.
But what's really cool about food, the stylist I use, they use the real stuff.
Okay.
I mean, you really have to because the Federal Trade Commission, you know, I mean, you can't show an ad and be using something that's not there.
Right.
Sure. You know, and really, you work fast with these perishable food items and, you know, it's not a problem. You just work with it. It's the medium and the circumstances you got to work with.
Mm-hmm. And maybe you could speak a little bit to the difference between shooting people and shooting portraits.
Well, when I use people in the brochures, the automotive brochures and that sort of thing, they were more like accessories.
Sure.
These portraits I just did this book, I really, really had to get into their world and be with them and get their world mm-hmm. in about 5 minutes. I mean, really create, because we did all these pictures in their element.
Right.
So there was a lot of pre-pro that went on before that to make sure, you know, I get that element and essence happening. And then when I'm with these people, I get them for like 3 minutes mm-hmm. and really get their world and really get them to, you know,
sure.
come out.
Yeah. And now moving on to transportation, which is something that was huge for you. Tell us about being an automotive photographer, and especially when things were really hopping, you know, before the financial crisis hit the industry. What types of jobs were you getting, and like what types of things were you shooting in the industry?
Mostly brochures. The web hadn't was just starting to catch on, but you know mm-hmm. they can use it for anything, and they shoot it for a brochure. They could put it in a web as, you know, the main thing is. I just shifted into digital in 2002. Mm-hmm. And even then, a lot of the car clients wouldn't accept it because it just wasn't the quality level. But what it is, it's the peak of detail production impeccability.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that you are at the top. Everything you shoot is a grand slam.
So you mentioned that you went digital in 2002.
Yeah.
Is that, yeah. Now, how does that for you compare to what you were shooting? Were you shooting with 35 millimeter or the bigger film at the?
Well, when I was shooting film, mostly 8x10.
Okay, yeah,
and then 4x5, and then when I'm shooting people on the sets, I was shooting roll film 6x8.
Okay, and how do you find digital comparing with what you shot then? Is there what's the comparison like, or what did you? Still, do you still prefer film? Or?
Oh, God, no. I would never.
Some
you know,
do,
I, was one of the
yeah.
I had my own lab and everything, but there's things, like that whole book I shot, there's no way I could have done it with film. It would have been like, you know, production nightmare.
Mm-hmm.
And digital allows so much more in the post-production. You know, I mean, Photoshop is like totally beyond amazing.
Right. You said you used to develop your own film. Do you do any of that anymore? Do you shoot on film at all anymore?
I haven't shot on film since 2003.
Yeah, okay. I maybe this has happened to you maybe when you're starting out. I don't know if this happens to a professional throughout their career at any point in time, but when you botch up photos, I mean, it's got to be something that's on people's mind, or people who are, you know, maybe just getting in to photography, and right. you know, they're asked to shoot a wedding, they're asked to shoot something of importance, and you know, they're probably worried about, if I mess this up, you know, this is somebody's wedding photos, or this is, you know, does that ever go through your mind? Or with digital, does it, I mean, you can just snap to your heart's content anyway? Or,
well, you know, I learned with film there was absolutely no latitude, no margin for error,
right? Yeah.
So it's too bad all the young people coming up can't really take advantage of that, because shooting on ektachrome, well, you know, you miss it by a stop and you're pretty much dead, you know,
sure.
unless you go through some crazy retouching. With Photoshop, you can get away with murder.
Yeah.
I mean, really. And, but, you know, what I would say to anybody out there contemplating being in the business is really learn your all the technical aspects of it. Don't rely on post-production to get you out. It'll work, but you know, you start with something really great and then you make it greater.
Mm-hmm. So in, you know, talking digital photography, how do you feel about, you know, the fact that, pictures can be manipulated so easy now with the computer, and, it's much easier for almost anybody to have, you know, a lot of the good software these days. You know, is there anything you can speak of to, people that are amateur that think they're a photographer, or they say they're a photographer because, I mean, they have access, you know, they got a digital camera, which is easy to get now. They have the software, but there's got to be something more to it than that, and the creativeness and that type of thing. Not anybody can be a photographer.
Well, first of all, you got to have a vision.
Right.
And I remember, I think back in the late 80s, Olympus Cameras did a big national spot. I remember the campaign, it was a film camera, and they were saying, you know, they compare this amateur to a professional, and the whole tagline was, well, I may not have their eye, but at least I have their camera.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you know, with all this digital stuff, you can get away with a lot more, but you know what? Real quality shows through, and you could tell it's something that's been stepped on. For me, anything that comes out of post-production doesn't look like it's been stepped all over.
Right.
The whole idea is to make it look really seamless and realistic. I mean, there's a lot of space for doing something that, you know, is very surreal.
Mm-hmm.
That's not the kind of work I do.
Right. Do you know people still shooting on film professionally and that some things they prefer? Or?
Well, I know I sold all my view camera equipment and my bigger roll film equipment. And I think it all went over to Asia. So that's where I think they're shooting film.
Okay. They're shooting film in Asia. They're not doing digitally. And, I guess we'll take a quick break, and when we come back, I want to discuss the economic downturn, how it affected you, and how you came out of that, and your book, obviously, My Town Miracles. And just want to remind everybody again, too, that keep an eye out for Big JD and Lippo in the Morning, coming soon to CJAM 99.1 FM. And it's kind of a takeoff of our Jabbercast podcast, actually, so... That's you can do a Google search or something for that if you want to get an idea of what the show is going to be like. And we'll be back right after this.
I mean, if there's a listener-supported radio station, it means that people can get
daily, every day, a different way of looking at the world, not just what the corporate media want you to see, but a different picture, different understanding, but a different picture, different understanding. Not only can you hear it, but you can participate in it. You can add your own thoughts, you know, and you can learn something and so on. Well, that's the way, people become human, you know. That's the way you become human participants in a social and political system.
You're listening to CJAM 99.1 FM, Windsor, Detroit.
To help support individuals living with lung disease, the Ontario Lung Association is hosting a race through Windsor where you and up to three friends can work together, completing challenges on the way to the finish line. It costs $25 per person, and all participants are asked to raise $125. Teams that sign up before September 12th can get 1 minute taking off their final time. All proceeds go to support the Ontario Lung Association. For more information or for sponsorship opportunities, please contact Gloria Fiaccio at 509-256-3433.
All right, we're back. You're listening to You Talking to Me. I'm Big JD. I have award-winning photographer Les Ward in the CJAM studio today. I want to ask you about your running. You've run some marathons.
Yeah, probably about 32 of them.
Wow. And Boston, I guess, was a big place for you, the Boston Marathon?
You know, for the average good runner, that's like the Olympics. It's the oldest one in the United States.
Where else have you run?
Los Angeles, Twin Cities, New York.
Yeah. Did you say you ran over here, too?
It used to be you start in Windsor and go through a tunnel and finish everything in Detroit. Now they have this great loop where you come across the bridge and go through the tunnel. It's really awesome.
So what are some of the awards that you've won? You know, maybe some are for specific photos or anything like that, but what are some of the things that accomplishments?
Well, there's a magazine out of San Francisco area. It's a huge commercial arts journal called Communication Arts, and I've won a couple awards there for sometimes for unpublished work and sometimes for like an album I did for Earl Clue, and I've won other different advertising awards. Detroit has the Caddies, now the D Awards, and there's these national awards called Mobius, So it's been for different brochures and different campaigns. You know, like I don't shoot a lot of CD covers. Things come around. I love changing it up.
It's slowly getting behind us, hopefully, but still somewhat fresh. And is the financial crisis hit America just a few years back, really. Michigan was obviously hit hard with the auto industry. Maybe you can, you know, talk a little bit about how that affected you and, you know, what you were doing and your photography as a business. What happened there?
So first of all, automotive photography was shrinking because probably around 2002, what was starting to get introduced was computer-generated imagery. So what they would do is take the CAD, the CATIA files, make a wireframe, and then would actually render a car. You know, they can make any angle, height, whatever they wanted, and render it to look like photoreal. So what was starting to happen is there was less car photography to go around. And then, 2008, the whole world caved in. And pretty soon it wasn't just about Detroit anymore. I mean, advertising in the United States, probably everywhere, came to a grind, a total halt. And pretty soon it was about Wall Street. Pretty soon it was about other nations. You know, it was all over the world. And it was a challenge because there was no air to breathe, as in work.
So, I mean, you were living a fairly lavish lifestyle at the time. Things were good. You had your studio.
Well, you know, I was segueing out of studio work because a lot of it was going away with the CGI. And I was doing more and more location work. And, well, it just wasn't feasible to keep this 7,000-foot studio going. And about that same time, all this stuff was coming to a head. My wife and business manager, well, she died suddenly. And I had a 16-year-old daughter, and I'm thinking, okay, great time to get out of the studio, because that was some amazing overhead. And what I really concentrated on is going after location work. I'm doing a studio job right now, but gosh, I don't think I've done one in about 3 years. I mean, it's like I did it. I did it for a very long time. Really got present that I really like being on location with people.
You mentioned what happened with your wife, and you know, you had your daughter to contend with and things. But you also had some personal barriers of your own.
Well, you know, we all get circumstances. She died of pancreatic cancer, and about 7 years earlier, I had a case of melanoma. And it was a miracle that, you know, that was fine and clear. And December 07, the same year my wife died, I had a reoccurrence of it. And so we got that working. And then July 08, they noticed it spreading to my lymph nodes. And miraculously, that was all clear. I feel like a cat, you know, I don't know how many lives I used up. I don't want to count. But, you know, it's all about circumstances coming at you. How are you in the face of the circumstance?
Was there any consideration for you to go elsewhere, maybe?
Well,
to pack up and just leave?
Or follow me.
Yeah, well, some of those, I guess, yeah. But, I mean, with the auto industry, too, and you know, things of that nature,
you know,
at least.
My LA clients were having a worse time than we were. The epicenter of transportation.
You were passionate about photography, continuing in the same field, basically had to come up with some creative ideas to stay in the game. And we'll get into this, I guess, what Landmark is and how that helped with all this. But was there anything else like prior to that, like during that transition that you started doing? Or
well, I could see along back, I mentioned 2002, that computer generation was coming along. And I always did a lot of lifestyle and advertising with the cars. So I'd always have people in the pictures because I was the one they go to do that. What I started to see was maybe I ought to go more after the lifestyle stuff. And that's why I started segueing into, because I could see the automotive was starting to dwindle.
Let's maybe talk a little bit about Landmark and what that is exactly for people that may not know. And how did this fit into, you know, through this transition possibly?
So Landmark Education is a personal training and development company. They were created in 1991. They're based in San Francisco. They're in over 100 cities in every continent except Antarctica. They offer over 100 different programs. And the flagship program that they have, the very foundation, is the Landmark Forum. And the whole idea of the Landmark Forum is for people that are up to big things,
looking for a pathway to have things really go big for them.
Like, it's not for people that are messed up. It's for people that are really up to big things and are really out to create big stuff in their life and for others.
You kind of climbed up the ladder within Landmark as well. You do a coaching?
I've done a lot of coaching, and they have one of the programs in their curriculum for living. There's three programs that combine into the curriculum for living. Mm-hmm. So the final one is the self-expression and leadership program. So now that you've gotten what you're about, now you're out in the community and you're making a difference with what you're up to.
Mm-hmm.
And you create a community project. And this is where you make a difference for others. You're sharing what you're up to, enrolling others in the possibility that you're up to, and you create this project and really start to make a difference for people in the community.
And a huge project for you is My Town Miracles. Tell us about the book, what we find within the pages of the book, and you know how it came about.
So I was coaching a self-expression program for the first time. And as a coach, we also have to come up with a community project. And I remember the first project I came with just did not have me lit up.
Right.
And I'm talking to my head coach, and it's the day before we start the classroom. And he goes, wow, that does not light me up, and I could tell it doesn't light you up, and you got 3 minutes to come up with something.
Mm-hmm.
And I've always wanted to do something around photography, you know, to make a difference out in the community, in the world.
Sure.
And I never knew what to do. So I just rattled off something like, well, you know what? I think I'll do 20 environmental portraits of different leaders in the city and the region. And then they're going to write their own words about why they're unstoppable.
Mm-hmm.
And we'll make a little gallery and I'll display it someplace.
Right.
And they said, well, great. That's all I had to do.
Mm-hmm. Became something much bigger.
Well, yeah. Once what happened is I was looking for a venue and I wanted to do it during the debut of the North American Auto Show because all the international press in, and I wanted to get a little attention. So I was looking around for places to put this, and I really wanted it down at the show. And well, nobody was finding a space or a time for me. So somebody said, well, why don't you call the executive director of the auto dealers? So not only did I call them, I got them in the book because they're so huge with the charities and what they create from the charity preview every year.
Right.
And he's just a great guy in terms of really creating connectedness between all the dealers and the community.
Mm-hmm.
So he got it to work that I got to be on the concourse of the auto show, and we did a print gallery, a freestanding print gallery on the concourse of the auto show.
How about coordinating, you know, working on the actual photography for the book and that, and coordinating all the, how was that? Was that, is more up your alley than anything, I guess, as far as developing the book, was going out and doing the photography. How was it coordinating all that? And were you pretty much doing that yourself or?
Yeah, totally. I mean, I created this whole thing. And once it was up at the auto show, I got an article written about me in the Detroit News.
Mm-hmm.
Well, guess what? That started to create more attention, and people said, well, why don't you make a book out of it? I'm like, ah, that's a lot of work. I don't think so. And, you know, it kept growing, and then I'm thinking, it's possible. You know, this, I'm getting a lot of coaching from the community at Landmark Education.
Mm-hmm.
And really, they were really the creative background to make this all work. And that's what made it really happen for me. And we kept taking it bigger and bigger, and people in the book would say, well, you got to call my friend here. You got to call so-and-so.
Okay.
So it kept growing, as you can imagine.
Sure. And how many people do you have in the book?
Well, it ended up with 84.
Wow.
And I kept saying, okay, 50's it. That's I'm done. Okay, anything over 60, I can't deal with it.
Right.
This took 2 years. I coached the self-expression course two times.
Mm-hmm.
And my project just kept growing. And finally, what made it really explode was I went into the top program at Landmark Education called the Introduction Leaders Program.
Oh, yeah.
It's like boot camp.
Okay.
It's like Navy SEALs.
Mm-hmm.
And really, I got to that. This is not about me and my book in Detroit. It's about the vibrancy and vitality of urban areas all over the world.
Mm-hmm.
and Detroit is the poster child.
Yeah. Was there anybody that declined to be in the book, or did everybody pretty much agree that?
There was a couple that declined.
Is there any plans to do another book, perhaps? Because there's probably more people that...
Well, I'm talking to the publisher that sort of advised me on this book. It was really self-published. Mm-hmm. But we're talking about other cities.
Okay.
I'm talking to a couple of agencies, one at Columbia University. It's all about the conversation about the vibrancy of urban areas everywhere. Like mm-hmm. 80% of the population on the planet live near an urban area. So urban areas really need to thrive. Otherwise, it's not going to look so good.
Sure. Obviously, with you being a photographer, was it, did it become more about creating this and what, you know, this was going to do, you know, as far as putting this thing together, or was it still the photography for you? Was that, you know, what was maybe foremost in your mind as far as putting this thing together?
For me, when I get near a camera, it's all about impeccability. There's no shortcuts. I'm not a snap shooter.
Uh-huh.
You got chimpanzees that could do that. You know, for me, everything was a creation, and people were into it. And, you know, so everything I do, if I'm going to put something out there, I want it to be the greatest. I mean, really, this is about our region.
Mm-hmm.
And I want it to look as impeccable as possible because it's going all over the world. I know the mayor's office took some to Italy. Our sister city in Italy is Torino, and mm-hmm. he gave one to some of the officials there.
And I've heard through the grapevine you have some plans to possibly do a film around the book.
Well, there's a crew working on that.
Okay.
I'm eagerly awaiting that. And when they give me the green light, then we start doing it.
Sounds good. Where can listeners check out, you know, your work online, possibly, or look for the book online?
Well, there's a MyTownMiracles.com website,
mm-hmm.
and you could purchase the book through PayPal. Let's see. There is the two retail outlets I have in Detroit are the Detroit Shop at Somerset Mall.
Okay.
And then Pure Detroit, they have three stores in the Fisher Building, Guardian Building, and the Renaissance.
Good stuff. Appreciate you being on the show, Les, and best wishes with the book and possibly beyond with another one and definitely the film. Appreciate you being here.
We're just going to keep going with it. Thanks a lot.
Great. Thanks. Well, it's true. Every picture tells a story, don't it? Not only are the stories told behind the pictures of My Town Miracles, but the Les Ward story is soon to be told in an upcoming documentary. Keep an eye out for that, and you'll get your chance to see that and some insight into the man stepping out from behind his camera to be filmed in front of one. And I'm also closing in on my one-year anniversary here at CJAM, just a few shows away. We're also getting closer to Big JD and Lippo in the morning. That's right. I'll be hosting a morning show here at CJAM starting after Labor Day. My Jabbercast podcast co-host Lippo will be joining me, and I hope all of you do too. It's going to be a great time. I'll see you next week. Thanks for listening.